What's up, everyone? I'm Bianca Torres with Apartment 5H. We're back at it. We're here with Jim, one of our neighbors.
Yo, yo, what up?
And today we have a special guest. We have comedian Derek Gaines.
What's going on? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Level. Even keeled.
Even keeled.
At best. That's what I'll say.
Okay.
Not too high, not too low. Right in the middle.
Well, I want to get into it because we've been having a conversation off camera.
Okay.
So first, tell us how you got your start in comedy.
I started back when in 03. I was 19. There was a place called the Laugh House in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I wanted to get up and try my shit out there because I was a jazz college kid.
Ooh.
But I was funny in jazz college. And they was like, yo, you need to take that pass here. They got like a little open mic they got on second and front. This one I used to go to school in Philly.
Okay.
And I got on stage for the first time and it just made all the sense in the world. I was playing concerts, but I still felt like I was behind somebody playing. So I didn't want to be behind anybody. I wanted the spotlight. So I kind of started getting on stage when I was 19. Never looked back. It was just like it just made sense. So I was went on open mic when I was 19. I started headlining by the time I was 24. So I just chopped it up. And then everybody was like, well, you good here, but you don't want to be a local celebrity. So move to New York and fall on your ass and figure it out that way. And that's basically how it started. So the first 5 years was Philly and the last 15 has been in New York City.
Are you from Philly?
I'm from Philly, yeah.
Okay. What part?
Northeast.
Okay.
That's like the real suburban area. That's the nice area. My mom didn't want me to be with the hoods, but I still liked the hoods.
Mm-hmm.
It was always funny. It was always quick with the wit. So when she moved away to South Jersey, that's just Philly continued. I went back across the bridge to go party with Philly motherfuckers. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, there's a group of them that like telling jokes. And I kind of, and we was all friends. And we would all line up for this open mic in Philly every Wednesday at 6:30 and just see whose shit was better. And if you bombed, you got teased all night. And then, you know, and then we do it again next week. And then it just became a thing. And then we was always out hanging. We was always out trying to joke on each other. We was always trying to write a sketch. And then push come to shove, you get good enough. You start getting paid to do it. So when the money start rolling, you go, how can I make more money doing this?
Right.
And then everybody was like, go to New York and hustle for real, because that's where all the comedy clubs is at. From either the bad ones to the good ones, but you got the Bronx, you got Brooklyn, you got Harlem, and then you got Manhattan. So, you know, you got four different boroughs to choose from. You got different areas to choose
mm-hmm.
from to tell these jokes that you think you're good at. So Philly was just like the prerequisite. It was like the beginning until the world opened up. And New York was the world that opened up pretty much. Because Kevin Hart did it. Kevin Hart was like the guy that was in Philly, got good, put movies out, and then he left. He was like, what do you do? What do you mean he left? He went to New York and got really good. He started talking to broader audiences. And then
mm-hmm.
he became this guy that is damn near a household name now because he took those steps. And we was like, well, shit, we want to take those steps. So we started in Philly. It was like, well, we don't go in here because we don't want to be local celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, New York is where you chase dreams. So, or hustle.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
So that's how it started. You know, it was a long time ago. It was 20 years ago.
That is a long time. It doesn't feel like a long time.
Yeah.
You said, what, 2003? Kind
03,
of
yeah.
It feels like just yesterday.
Yeah.
So is Kevin Hart, like, if you're a comedian coming out of Philly, like, that's like the guy that...
That's the Mother Mary. That's
okay.
The Hail Mary,
okay.
Right there.
Okay.
We look at him like, all right.
Who was before Kevin?
Who's before Kevin? Shout out to Javon Pearson. Javon Pearson was a guy.
Name.
He started writing for the Fresh Prince. That was big. Shout out to my dog Toure, the Philly Wild Child. He stayed there, but he owns Philly when it comes down to comedy. Like
okay.
If you're going through Philly, you gotta talk to Toure first. And Toure was the dude that taught me how to write a joke for real.
Okay.
So Two was the guy, and then Spank, who rolls with Kev, and Naeem, who rolls with Kev.
Spank Horton.
All the Plastic Cup Boys came out of Philly. So I watched all them guys leave with Kev to go be somebody. So all of us young dudes, Dave Temple, Monroe Martin, me, Chris Cotton, rest in peace, Reggie Conquest. All of us was like, oh, we watching them guys. Like, so if they leave, shit, we should leave. And
right.
then we all went to New York. So all of us got, you know, we all kind of make a paper now. You know, we not on Kevin Hart's level just yet,
mm-hmm.
but we see what it could be. So it's like, you know, stay hopeful.
Right.
Yeah, because I remember one night, which is fly, because Kev kind of showed with like, you short, but you could still be Philly fly. He was like, he was always the best dressed. He was like, damn, this dude. All the bitches came to his shows and all
mm-hmm.
that. So he was like, damn, this could really be some... It's like, it's funny, but you could really do some hip-hop shit out here. I remember when Petey Crack used to come to the shows in Philly. I remember when Stay Prop was popping,
yeah.
they'd come see Kev. He was like, what the fuck is Beanie Siegel coming here? But, you know, he transcended. And true story, about a year ago, Kev was in New York promoting a movie, so he figured he'd stop by the club. And we was all working at the Cellar, but Kev wanted to drop in. So he comes in, Kev gets on stage with a chain we couldn't believe. It was like this iced out.
Super rapper chain.
It was dancing. We all tucked our shit in. We was like, nah. And it was like, yo, this thing's really cool up there. He dances, neck dancing, but he up there making people laugh. So it was like, oh, okay. So you can find that middle ground of like Philly fly, but being funny. And then we kind of just took it from there. So he was always that guy.
That's true, because I feel like, I mean, no diss to the comedians. I'm just saying, like, you don't see like a whole bunch of like fly comedians, right?
No.
Everyone's like just chill.
Because everybody's on that self-deprecating. You got to tease yourself in order for the crowd to like you.
Right.
So Kev never exuded that. Eddie Murphy never exuded that. Martin Lawrence never exuded that. It was always leather-bound suits, grabbing your dick on stage, letting you know this is the show you want to see.
Yeah.
It's not me standing up here being ironic, trying to get you, convincing you that I'm this and this is why my life is that way. No, it was more so, it was grandiose. And Philly dudes is grandiose. So to be able to be up there sort of vulnerable but still fly is a fine line in showmanship. So we was like, dog, that looked like the way to do it. Swag meets jokes? Come on, man. It's unstoppable, but you got to get there. You can be fully dressed. You can have, what, a $5,000 outfit on, but bomb. You're going to hear about it. So it's like,
yeah. But he was fly.
I remember, like, Philly was just a different kind of honesty. I remember I would go on stage and might not do well, and I'd tell, like, the head dude of the club, yo, the crowd is whack. So the dude go up there, kill, right? Then come off stage and be like, yo, Derek, they was laughing at the shit I was talking about. I don't know what the fuck wrong with you. And the whole bar would be like, ah, you whacked off. So it was like, it's gridiron, but it was so fun because you kind of built friendships. It was like Baptism Under Fire. You ever heard that?
No.
Baptism Under Fire. It's like you get blessed in the bullshit. Like you go face these hard-ass Northwest crowds, off Southwest crowds that Spank was from. You go up there and do jokes in front of North Philly niggas at 12 o'clock. And these the Muslims. These the ones that wear the Tims, sell the oils. They got their girl in there all wrapped up, but they want to laugh too. So how do you get them? So you go, yeah. So
that might Philly be a
was
tough
like,
crowd.
Philly was like, yeah, at 12 o'clock, what you going to say to all these Muslim niggas from North? Well, I don't know. I hope what I wrote down in my stage presence gets them. And it used to. And it was like, oh, wow. And this is like just the first 5 years of my career. Like it's like gauntlet type shit. Mm-hmm. You had to do that. And then what was so funny is because I'm from the burbs. So I would go to Philly and enter this world to go try to be funny. And during the day, I was a janitor at my mama's church. Okay. So it was like, oh, wow. It was like a double life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the stage kind of showed me a lot. It just showed me how to navigate and how to get cool.
Well, how did you know you were funny? Like, what was, like, one of the first instances where you're like, okay, I can do this?
On some innocent shit, I used to make my mama laugh all the time.
Aww.
I mimicked the cartoons. I mimicked the Looney Tunes and all that. And then try to do what Bugs Bunny did and then run up to my mom and be like, Mom, look what I could do. Boom. So that was one. That's like when I was 3. And then when I was 10, I was doing jokes that my homies told me at school. And then I tried them in front of summer camp kids. So I had to remix the joke in my head to make it sound funnier than how they told me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd do that when I was 10. And then when I was 15, I was like 15, I was doing speech competitions at high school. Like I was up there trying to do like Martin Luther King speech competitions. Like how good can you sound like Martin Luther King? So I was like, you had to get your writing on. Then you had to memorize what you wrote and then perform in front of an audience. And then when I was also 16, here come the goofy shit. I was in jazz band in high school.
Jazz band?
I used to play the drums.
Oh, that's dope. Okay.
So when you're in a good jazz band, you get to compete against other jazz bands around the region. So every Friday night, instead of just being off school, home, I had to go back to school dressed up and we had to go travel to other places to go compete with other jazz bands. So I'm out at night playing jazz at 16. So I'm already kind of living a life that's like weird. Like, oh, wow, I'm competing with other drummers and jazz people. I'm listening to music. I'm networking. I'm doing the whole show thing in high school. So it was like, then it was that. And then when I knew, I was in college. And I was failing piano. I was failing at piano.
Mm.
But when I was failing, I cover up the fails with just telling jokes in class. And everybody in class would bust out laughing like, oh, you're kind of good at this shit. You know they got this little spot on second in front. It's in Philly. It's called the Laugh House. That short dude is from there talking about Kevin. This is all when I'm 18. This is when I'm 18 years old.
Okay.
So the day after I turned 19, I switched shifts with my homie Greg. I was like, yo, I got to go try this open mic downtown in Philly to see if I got anything. He was like, all right, gotcha. And we switched shifts. And I went, I got on stage, one shorty laughed, one chick just went, this nigga. And I was like, that's all I need. And I'll come back. And then from then on, I just kept running the gamut because it was an epiphany I had in a jazz concert that made me go, I don't really want to do this anymore. What it was happens? Weird. I was playing a solo. I was having a good old time. You know, stage gets black. Saxophone player stops for a second, the leader of the band, to let me go do my solo. The solo is great. Crowd's going crazy, right? I was, at the time, it was the grinding beat that had everybody going nuts. So I was playing the grinding beat on a set of congas, right? I was doing my little Afro-Cuban rhythms, mixing it with the grinding. Okay. So they like, oh, this motherfucker is having a good old time. And I slammed the clock, and everybody goes crazy, but the spotlight went back to the saxophone player. And now I'm just behind a nigga playing just the regular room. So I was like, I want that to last a little longer.
So
I was like, you know what? Everybody keeps telling me I'm funny. Let me try this open mic shit. Because that is just me and a microphone. So I got to prove everything in front of everybody right now. So I was like, that's more pressure. I'll do that. Lo and behold, did it one time. Then never stopped doing it. So it's been that from 19 to right now.
Okay. Well, you mentioned something. You had a little deflecting going on when you started your comedy journey. So we spoke about this off camera too, how a lot of comedians do, people don't know that they suffer in silence, right? Like they're going through something and they cover it up with a joke and laughter. So do you feel like, is that the case?
Oh yeah, that's the tears of a clown. That's what they call it, the tears of a clown. I done had homies die over this shit. You know, I done had my homies had parents die, but we still got to get on the mic. I remember one time, my boy Artie Fuqua, I don't know if you know him, he had a son die, right? His son passed away. And that night, wiping his eyes, was still back there telling jokes with us because it was like, well, shit, this is therapy for a lot of dudes.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to process any other way. I mean, this sadness will eat you up, but there's the only thing that can break you from that is levity. So, you know, life be life. I know motherfuckers that got relatives with cancer still pull up to the club. I know people that's going through baby mama issues and then money in the rears, taxes, kid drama, all kinds of things. But they always find a way to get back to the stage because for them, that's where it's at. The answer is up there. And so when you go, well, shit, that's a crazy mentality to have. How strong can I be in that mentality? Wow. It, not to say that you're invincible, but damn it, you have an outlet to make you look like you're invincible.
Right.
So. Yeah, so shout out to everybody going through that.
Yeah, it's kind of like music artists, right? Like they go through their thing, but the music is their therapy.
Yeah, you know.
So it's kind of like
I used to listen to all sad love songs because, you know.
You listen to sad love songs?
You could be like, Brian McKnight used to be going through shit on the sad tracks.
Did,
you'd be like,
did.
Yo, he Boys did. And Men would be going through shit on all the sad tracks. The sad tracks when niggas was breaking up with their girl or the girl cheated on. Remember, what was that group? Remember that? Not Drew Hill. I think they was named Profile. Remember them?
Profile.
And it was like, Profile.
You better leave me alone.
Pack your bags, yes. Get going.
Because I don't want, what the fuck this bitch do? Like, oh. The breakup music, you'd be like, oh, they put, remember Joe? Remember that, the Joe?
And, yes.
Uncle Sam. That was like the Uncle Sam. That's old R&B. These niggas would be singing about what the girl really did. And then when Donnell Rollins came out with that simp shit, we was like, oh, man, come on. I know you cheating on me, but don't tell me. We was like, come on, dog.
Oh, Mario Lyon? Yeah. I don't want to know?
Yeah, I don't want to know. Shit, we was like, what does that mean? Are you kidding me? At 15, 16, we was like, yo, this dude is a chump, nigga. Like, why would he do that? But in the sad songs, you hear all the, oh, Shorty was a whore. I'm fucking around. But you'd be like,
no, because people still be talking about that shit till this day. It's just, it's now rappers doing the, no.
And rappers don't even open up like that because, you know, most of them don't even, they be telling somebody else's story. And then they log it as if it was theirs, but you know.
That's true.
That's the game you play, I guess.
That is true.
Because in comedy, you're trying to be honest. You're fighting for your honesty. You're fighting to be as honest as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that is true because I feel like a lot of comedians do use their trauma, too, to make it funny.
Well, you know that whole thing, tragedy plus time equals comedy. All these little rules they got, all these little E equals MC squared things and jokes. If you say this, or if you, how does that affect you? And that's where you write from, what you're affected from. And then it pushes you to be honest or vulnerable on stage. So,
and those are the best jokes.
Yeah, man.
How you feel, I always like to ask comedians this, how you feel about the comedians on Instagram?
I like them. I like those guys. You got to understand, it's like five facets of humor. there's like five facets of comedy or something. It's stand-up, sketch, sitcom, slapstick, and stand-up, sketch, sitcom, slapstick, and improv, right? And I think the guys on the internet are in sketch. Sketching now, streaming it could be a whole nother thing. But yeah, those are the guys that can be funny fast. I always appreciate to be able to write a sketch in under 30 seconds or whatever, and come off on it, come off on Instagram, and you get all these views. And you know, I've always liked them because you know, comedy is avenues. Like, you know, hip hop, not everybody raps the same. So you know, you can have, you know, some people like, you know, pop. Some people like Pop Smoke, but the other niggas like Wu-Tang. And you know, those are two
separate,
different. So you know, there's many lanes in comedy. So I think the internet dudes have a lane that they kind of mastered, and it's beautiful to master on the internet. Why not? Everything else on the internet, but put something funny up there. I always like the Ha Ha Davises as well. I always love Ha Ha, and all the guys now. Drewski's funny to me.
Yeah,
I think all the guys funny. I'll never hate. But yeah, mine. I have another facet. Mine is stand up. Mine is getting into the craft, writing stuff down, pros, cons, callbacks, tags. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different, it's like a whole different facet. So I appreciate what they've contributed, because you'd be like, okay, keeps more things funny. Wow.
Do you think that it's easy for them to cross over? Like, can a skit person do stand up and can a stand up person do skits?
A skit person will have a tough time doing stand up if he never did stand up. But a stand-up person can do sketch, because sketch is just long-form stand-up, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. Mm.
So, yeah. So the sketch guys, they get these wild-ass audiences. They get this following. It's crazy. But they figure, how can I be funny on a thing? Let me book a club and try to talk to them. Mm-hmm. It's different from when you're on that little screen on your phone than to translate 60 minutes of live performance. So there might be a little hiccup there. Mm-hmm. But I don't discourage any of these niggas from writing jokes down and really going out there and trying what you got.
Well, how is it different though? Like if someone that does skits came to you and say, "Hey, I want to do stand up. What advice do you have?"
I'll be like, "Well, you're only going to get the answer on stage, so you should write a premise, a bridge, and a punchline if you know how that goes. You have to write an idea, then you got to write something that connects the idea to the punchline, right? Are you good enough to write these ideas that people can see it from you talking?" Then take them with you on this journey and then have a punchline for them to laugh at. Can you do that? Is that something in your suit, in your sketch writing that you think you can do? And can you do it over and over again for 30 minutes, 15, 60? Because you can edit a sketch on TV, on Instagram. You can make a mistake and then do it over again. But in stand up, they watching you do it live. So can you do that?
Right.
And if they can't, well, you're gonna bomb. But if you can, you might come out flying. So I want everybody to get on stage, but that's the answer. Get on stage, boy. See what happens, because that's where it's at. The answer's up there.
Yeah.
Ain't for me. The general pop, the people sitting paid, dressed, had to buy their girl, had to wait for their girl. They got to buy dinner. They got a drink limit. They spending money, dog. If they spending money, you better not make these niggas think that you wasting their money, because then you're going to be talked about negatively.
Yeah.
Because you conned them into thinking that 15 seconds online can translate to 60 minutes on stage. So, like, dog, how you pushing your product? And that's basically how that goes. So, it's on them.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Where's your toughest crowd at?
Toughest crowd. Bridgeport, Connecticut. Yeah. My toughest crowd seemed to be from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
That's interesting.
Everywhere else I've had a good time, even Atlanta, is still funner than Bridgeport, Connecticut. Because for some reason, Bridgeport, Connecticut got uppity Bronx niggas that moved out of the hood.
Whoa, not too heavy on the Bronx. We're from the Bronx, okay?
But listen what I'm
not
saying.
Not too much.
They move out the Bronx and they get a little fancy in Bridgeport.
They might.
They come to the comedy show still acting like they in the Bronx. And then you got to talk to that. And these motherfuckers been drinking whatever all night long.
Yeah,
so you go, God damn. So, yeah. And they kind of like, they not in the Bronx, but they still feel like they need to have
It's still there.
You know how the ex-niggas be.
It's still there.
So they bring this to the comedy club. And you go, what am I doing? You just can't sit and talk. Because they all hopped up on Nutcrackers. So you'd be like, oh, come on,
whoa,
dog.
Whoa, whoa, we don't drink Nutcrackers anymore, okay? Unless it's summertime. No,
I figured I'd get you riled up. But no, sometimes.
No, it's easy to get me riled up about the Bronx, you know. I mean, unless it's summertime yesterday. And you're on the beach and someone happens to come by with a Nutcracker, then yes, I will absolutely have one.
But no, that's my toughest crowd's Connecticut.
So was it kind of like people from the Bronx but are in Connecticut? Like, but they that's what you're in Connecticut saying? Now.
But they in it. But they not going back to, they in there. And they got all this Bronx still stewed up in this little suburban town that they in.
Okay.
So they got to get it out somewhere.
So
with another nigga talking, they figure they need to talk. So yeah, that's why it becomes a tough little combative little thing.
I can see how that is.
Yeah, but still fun though.
Still fun.
End of the day, still fun.
Okay. I want to bring it back to the Mario Winans conversation. Because you did shit on the song, so that means like...
I love the song, but it's still like... You know, like you listen to what he's saying,
yeah, he sounds crazy.
Wait, so right? Wait. So if someone is cheating on you, not saying that you're having this situation, obviously, but if you don't, you want to know?
Yeah, I want to know, so I can get the fuck out of there.
Yeah?
Or just stand on your own 2 feet, gentlemen, get your balls back. Like, bitch, are you... You wasting my time. You wasting my money. You wasting the heart that I got left that I even gave to you, bitch. So give it back. Give it back so I can maybe try this on another chick. Because you obviously stepping out. I ain't got time. Sorry. But this nigga said, just don't tell me. And you can still sleep next to me and eat my food.
Are I you mean, if she's not giving you any signs.
That nigga said, keep it on the low.
Yeah,
keep
I mean.
It on so, the low?
Wait.
Are you
because,
crazy?
No, because women have that sentiment too. Some women feel like, listen, men do it. I'm not saying
hey,
I do.
Black men don't cheat.
No, I agree.
Black men don't cheat.
Come on, so guys. Don't hype me up with that
hey,
conversation.
Hey. Black men don't cheat.
That's a lie.
Next topic. Black men don't cheat. Black men don't cheat. But anyway.
Okay. Are you gonna talk about this on stage, too? Is that some inspiration?
I don't, you know. I ain't got no point in talking about it. I don't cheat. There ain't no point in
what's your
it
sign?
Up. I'm Leo. Woo! Anyway.
Next topic, because I ain't even gonna do you like that.
You traumatized. Something happened. Sometime. If you don't bring what up, month is something Leo? Happened to you, babe.
You're right.
Is this your interview? Now, talk to me.
What do you, I mean?
What's going on? What happened? What did Leo do to
no,
you?
No, I'm healed now.
Okay, good.
No, not a Leo. It was a Virgo. Those are the worst.
This has nothing to do with me, then.
I'm just saying, like, okay. I can tell that because you were talking about your heart, so I felt like maybe you were a Capricorn or a Cancer because it's like, no. You don't play about your heart.
Leo's are loyal, and then you fuck with that loyalty. We'll never get it back. Deep. We'll never be as loyal ever again.
You know what? I like you, so I ain't even gonna go in on you like
Leo's
that.
Leo's loyal.
I'm not gonna do that.
You tarnished the loyalty.
No, I don't know that about Leo.
You were out there in the wilderness.
Wilderness. King of the jungle.
Hey, whatever. You know that's what the things they say with the horoscope. You know.
You don't believe in horoscopes?
It's fun. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. It gets you going. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to do it back in the day in Philly on Carter and Sanborn. That's a hell of a throwback. But Carter and Sanborn, on Power 99, they used to do the horoscope. And my mom used to turn up the radio and go, let me hear what they got to say for Leo's. You know, so it's fun. I mean, you know, it might be, you might be on to something, but what the fuck? Everything's on to something.
Yeah, but it's a little too on point sometimes.
Sure.
It is.
Fortune tellers do shit like that. They read your hands. Oh, you know, fine. It's like, okay.
I don't like that stuff. I feel like they're looking into your soul a little too deeply.
Okay. Well, horoscopes is PG that.
Yeah, but they're not like looking at like your spirit, like, you know, like.
Okay.
You know?
Sure.
I don't believe in them.
You don't?
There you go. Stand on that. You don't even believe in them.
I feel like no men, though. I feel like it's all women.
It's fun for girls to be like, oh, my sign and the fire and the sun.
No, but see, I don't go that far. I don't go that far.
They be looking at crystals. You ever see girls that look at the crystal before they go to work? Oh, God, you ever been in a girl house? And she look at the crystal.
I see, I don't do all that.
She put a pantsuit on and go to work.
You said I'm Spanish, I'm reading him? No, that's not true.
Oh, they read the Spanish woman, they read the hands, like.
No,
yeah.
No, I don't do all crystals. I don't know my Venus rising. Like, I don't do all that.
I'm basic.
Trip. Like, I'll look online at Cafe Astrology. Oh, okay, I'm going to have a good day today.
Oh, so you coffee.
Yeah,
you
coffee no, I am.
Table in that 100%.
Shit, so. Or when it comes to matches. That, I think, is very true.
Okay.
When it comes to, like, a relationship or people that you vibe with, that is 100% true.
Okay, sure.
It is.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You heard it first.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm not gonna be like, nah.
It's true.
But you, fine.
It is.
Beautiful.
Anyway.
Like, where you want me to go from there? You got it, man.
Nowhere. Just let me have it. That's exactly what I want you to do.
You got
just
it,
let me
hey,
have
sis.
It.
You got it, sis. You got
Thank
it,
you.
Sis.
That's what
hey,
I like.
Hey, sis. You got it.
Now, I know.
Hey, sis. You got it.
Thank you. Say it one more time.
Hey, sis. It's on you. You and your horoscopes. You got it, baby.
That's right.
I didn't know you believed in that.
A little bit.
She
not a lot.
Hard. We just spent 3 minutes on this shit. You really.
3 minutes is nothing.
Yeah, but that's 3 minutes. Philly. Hold your breath for 3 minutes.
Philly versus New York.
Who, now.
Who won?
Now.
Jada Kiss, Benny Siegel.
Whew. All right.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh.
Now. I will say, God, I love Jada Kiss too. But Beanie had the line. Peep speculation, game over. Nigga, dig this. I'm about to sun kiss like a soda. That had us going crazy in high school. Like, we didn't even understand.
That was
high school for me. When he says speculation game over, nigga, dig this, he started with that. We was like, dog, what's about to happen? Then he said, no sharks in the water, can't swim in the pool. I eat snacks after school, my stomach is full. We was in school going, oh, this nigga's Jesus. There's Beanie Siegel, dog. Yeah, so, and I was from a Philly town, right. So we went deep. But man, oh man, Jada Kiss put out a wonderful diss track. So we was like, that was a fight. That was a fight. But we all took Siegel that year. We took Siegel. We took Beanie.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not a bad take.
I got guns that the government got. Motherfucker, if you...
Yeah,
man. It was... It was high school. We was banging on lockers listening to that shit. It was great. That was awesome. It was like Beanie kind of coming with all Broad Street Bully right there. Broad Street Bully right there. But Jada Kiss, he beat Dipset. The fight that just happened.
You say it like it was like...
No, I tell you who said it. Cam said it on his podcast. He explained why they got.
Mm.
But, yeah, it was when Jada said, we don't make songs for the ladies. That was the whole turnaround in that battle. Did you watch?
Of course I did.
When Joelle said,
I was supposed to go
got
and
songs
I got there late.
Bitches, nigga.
I was
and then Jada said,
it was nuts.
Oh, we don't? And he put that Mariah
no, that
track
was
I said, dog, what are you talking about?
That was amazing.
We got Grammys. Y'all got Grams.
That
said,
was amazing.
Oh. I was like, yeah, dog. Oh, shit. New York was lit up that night.
It was.
Grammys Gram line was crazy.
It was. I was so mad. I was supposed to go and I had dinner with my boss. And I was like, oh, they're going to start late. I'll get there a little late. I got there. They did not let me in.
You see that? You see the scene when Jada Kiss was doing pull-ups before that battle? He was doing pull-ups in the locker room. And MSG, he was doing pull-ups, like muscle-ups. He was doing the... I was like, oh, these niggas... Oh, no. Harlem got something coming.
That shit was insane.
I was
when
tight.
When Jada Kiss was doing muscle-ups before that battle, I said, yeah. I think the Locks trying to do something tonight. Fucking
so Styles. He slapped Cam's foot off the thing. Was that Styles? And Cam had his foot up on a chair and he smacked his foot.
Was it?
That was crazy.
No, that might have been was it Styles?
That was P.I.
That was crazy. That was
no, that top five regrets in life was missing that.
That was good.
Till this day, I see clips online, I'll be like, fuck. That was a great battle.
Jada carried that though.
He did. I never seen somebody want it so bad. I was like, this dude, he want this thing. And he took it.
Nah, he came prepared. He had 3 meals, like he was like ready. Vitamins,
ready.
Emergencies, everything.
They've been drinking juice. You know how they got those
yeah,
juice
yeah,
bars.
Yeah, 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 they got the
They've
juice
been
bar.
Drinking juice. These yeah. motherfuckers got antioxidants.
Green juice. Yeah,
they was ready to
yeah,
go,
yeah, yeah.
dog.
Supplements.
I was watching like these motherfuckers was antioxidanted up. They ready to, like Styles look healthy. Stout. P look healthy. The Silverback Gorilla look healthy.
She too.
I was
yeah,
like,
yeah,
she
yeah,
was
yeah.
like, I was like, she in good shape. Oh, they ready for this shit. I was like, oh no, this is different. I was like, they must have been on that Jim Jones workout plan. You know, the one Jim be in the gym with Method Man, all them niggas. Mm-hmm.
I think Mano be on it too.
Davey.
They be all in here muscling up. I be like, oh yeah, they.
It was a great battle. It was one of the greatest rap battles.
Yeah, that shit was crazy.
100%.
Crazy.
That shit was crazy. Who's your favorite rapper?
My favorite rapper? Westside Gunn.
Oh.
I like them. I like the Griselda Boys. The Griselda Boys from
Rough Buck. Yeah, I know. Hell yeah. You like Westside better than Benny?
Let me explain.
Please.
All right. All right. That, but listen. All right. Okay. Benny the Butcher, awesome. Conway, more than awesome.
Yes.
But it's how Wes carries himself. Like, it's the
confident.
Just putting them do all through the track. You'd be like, are you really doing this? And after you listen to it, you go, I can understand why he's doing it. Like, all right, I had an epiphany. I was at the Sony Hall. I was at a Griselda concert, the first one I ever went to. I didn't even know about these dudes. My cousin from Philly put me on to him. He was like, yo, they're doing a reunion. Griselda's all in one room. Benny, Conway, Wes. And I don't know these guys. So I'm like, all right, I'll go. Since it's a free rap concert ticket, I'll go. Check it out. I walk in. It's packed full of white boys and black dudes. Weed smoke in the air. So I'm like, oh, this is a real rap concert. And it was like, ain't no bitches in here. So I know these niggas, they probably want some other shit. The DJs was spinning all underground Sean P shit. I'm like, uh-oh, they bumping Sean P. Darren's was up there. They doing all these New York underground tracks. They putting all these hard ass fucking what I'm looking for. They was mixing like Crooklyn Dodgers, and then they put Sean P on and like just old travel, like all this underground rap. I'm like, all right, what am I in for? Right? So I'm just standing there, and then all of a sudden, lights go down, rap concert. Then Wes come out. I don't know who Wes is, but the crowd do. They going off like he Michael Jackson, because all he doing is standing there. And they're like, and I'm like, what is the fuck? And Wes is standing there, he got a bait sweatsuit on with the big ruby, with the big iced out, whatever. And I'm looking like, what the fuck? And all of a sudden he goes, he plays the motto. That's the one that I did his first single, the motto. And then everybody's singing it, but then he do something that fucked me up. Because before he died, Shay was their guy. Shay was they DJ producer, whatever, right? So Wes goes, hey, yo, Shay, play my shit, son. And then Elizabeth came on. I was like, Wes is like hit that rocked the world. This is the first time I ever heard it. It blew my mind. It was like one of those, and can't nobody fuck with me. I'm that one. I'm like, yeah. What did he say? Keep the mag tucked. But that Elizabeth. And he said, you ever see the fiend lick the resi off the razor? I said, what? The fiend licked the resi off the razor? I said, what kind of shit? It was the way he said, this is swag. And then he did the fashion shit. And the way he was rapping, and do, 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 and I'm into wrestling. I'm like, this is some other shit. So I was like, yeah, I think that's the swag that I like. And then when I went and got all the 20 albums that he put out during pandemic and all that, I said, yeah, this dude is. And then it's the music he picked, because I'm a jazz college dude. So he picked all these gospel tracks. Beats, yeah. And then when Conductor Williams was picking all these gospel songs and then dropping the beat out, and then you just rapping over the melody, I'm like, what kind of hip-hop is this? And I'm like, this motherfucker, he was rapping to like an elevator music song. It's called Bubba Chuck. It's called Bubba Chuck. It was on Fly God is an Awesome God 2. And I was like, this dude is, why am I like in love with the sound? Like, I was like, Benny be on it. 97 yeah. Hove, all that shit. But it was just like, West be like, he say shit like, you ever had a gun in your mouth like a cavity? I'll walk through your blood happily. Like, that's wild. But then to do it over a premiere beat, like, what is this? This is like some crazy shit. And he says, this is the one that got me. This one made me go, I think he's my favorite dude. He said, everybody think they fly now, but ain't nobody flyer. You ever cook a half a brick in the air fryer? I said, what the? Even though I'm from the suburbs. I'll never cook drugs. I'll never shoot nobody. But my God, it's like a comic book. This nigga is a superhero to me. And I was like, that's the guy.
Half a brick in the air fryer is crazy.
Yeah, that so is, half a brick in the air fryer, and then I start seeing him do concerts. Vogue cover came out, then he was all about this fashion shit. This motherfucker's at Art Basel. He's fucking all the designers in Paris. He got the Palm Angels poncho on, or he got the Louis Vuitton joint with the big ass bracelet. He's doing his own videos, but they like real. It's like anachronistic. It's like old time. Look, it came out of the 90s. So he doing all his shine shit, but he still look like Wu-Tang. So I was like, oh, I'm done. This is like a weird mix of everything. It was like it was like the mainstream hip-hop with the underground hip-hop. Then he got two lyricists that he can count on. And they like, nah, that's my guy. He the one that came up with it, but he knew we could rap. And then when I found out that he started the shit, he started it because Conway got shot. And he was laying on the couch with his mouth all turned away. So he was like, all right, I'm going to start it. You heal up and then you gonna finish it. That's fly shit. Like he kept his homies in the game. Like I'm like, and then when Sheen Gunn died and they was like, what would Sheen Gunn do? And that whole Sheen Gunn album and then Hitler Wears Hermes one. To call an album Hitler Wears Hermes, first of all, like that's what? And then get that up on a billboard in Times Square. I said, who the fuck is this dude, man? I said, you gotta wanna do, shoot for the stars like that. Cause that's wild. He got 10 of them bitches. Hitler wears Hermes 1 through 10. I'm like, what? Crazy. And then Fly Guys and also got 1, 2, 3 coming out. Like, he got, this dude got books and sets. It's like, this motherfucker be like underground junk. He got, was it Hall vs. Nash with him and Conway rapping back. I'm like, this shit is, this is like 90s shit.
Yeah, he making me, I need to go listen to some.
I listen to him. I'm going to listen to him again now.
Yeah.
West got 20 albums. And it's just some of the beats he chose and how he chooses to rap is ill. And then how he got his homies, just these other two niggas from Buffalo, that are rapping circles around everybody I ever heard. So I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
I like this little collective. Griselda is like, yeah, that's like cold Saturday morning cartoon shit. These motherfuckers, it was ill. So I was like, and I started really listening to them. I'm like, I kind of like all the stuff they talk about. And I these mean, niggas is old. They like in their 40s.
I was going to say, no, they
she like, wow.
They've been at it for a while and a they didn't give up. Because yeah. they've been putting at it for a while, and shout out to them because they didn't give up. Like,
you fuck with 38?
Yeah, I like 38 Special. Shout out 38 Special, Rome Streets, Rock Marciano, all them guys.
Ransom.
Even Makami. Makami is an icon. That's what he said on that track. Yeah.
Yeah, you know who I just started listening to? Ugly God. You listen to him?
He's been out Stove for God ages. Cooks. He's back out?
No, Stove God.
Stove.
Oh, I'm about to say,
Stove God.
Ugly God.
Stove
God. I mixed them.
Stove God.
Stove God. Okay, I haven't.
Stove
I haven't
God
listened
is
to
retarded.
Yeah.
Listen to Stove God on Bubba Chuck. His verse is insane. It carried me through 2020.
Mmm.
Fiend's arms wrapped like Ultimate Warrior is the coldest shit I ever heard in my life. Fiend's arms wrapped like an Ultimate Warrior.
First of all, that's my favorite wrestler of all time. So
like,
I get that.
What are you talking about? Yeah, he said they were saying
that's
some
insane.
Things.
That is insane.
Reasonable Drought is the album.
Reasonable Drought is great.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check it out.
Stole God.
I need some new stuff to listen to. I'll check it out.
Who's your favorite comedian?
My favorite comedian? Still Richard Pryor. It's still Pryor.
Richard over Eddie?
Richard over Eddie, yes. Richard over Eddie, and
why?
It's Chappelle and it's Richard and Chappelle for me.
Okay.
But Eddie is up there because it's Eddie. It is Eddie, but Richard, you want to talk about life and that whole covering it up? Richard was born in a whole house, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Known drug addict, just running through. Mm-hmm. You know, check this shit out. Richard did gay shit, and niggas still accepted him.
That is true.
What you
that
mean?
Is true.
Oh, Richard used to fuck on Marlon Brando.
That's what the streets
a lot of people don't know
say.
That.
That's what the streets say.
And he has jokes about.
Oh no!
He has jokes about up and smoking, talking about.
Don't say that. We
pause, nigga. Hey, pause. No Diddy, but nah. Richard did some gay shit, and we was like, okay.
It's a fact.
That's how
that's
funny
a fact.
He was.
It
that's
didn't
how
even
funny
matter.
Dog
it
was.
It did not even matter.
Watch out, Richard Pryor up and smoking. He has a joke that's going to make you go, what the fuck? I can't say it because I don't want to get... But Richard has a joke on up and smoking. You go, what the fuck is this nigga on?
Yeah. Oh, bendito, you all right?
Yeah, I
nah,
didn't
but
know
nah,
that. That's crazy.
It's okay. That,
but no, nah, all that aside, he's just funnier than everybody. He taught hilarious. Me... Richard taught me how to personify unliving things. He taught me how to... Watching Richard just be able to interweave... Like crowd work, and then going to the set. He always had like Black Panther Party members in his shows.
Mm.
He spoke on a level that a lot of black people didn't because he was dating black women and white women, so he had jokes for both of them.
Yeah,
he knew the attitudes of both white and black women, and to hear him talk about it in such like because he had to go to court a lot, suing them. He talked about how him and his first wife broke up, and he was abusive, but somehow he still got it off. And ladies was still coming to see him.
Yeah.
And then he was funny in all his movies. But Richard, just that nigga's crazy album. Just, it kind of rocked me. I was 20 years old and I used to listen to it every day. And I was just like, yo, why is this shit so funny? Because he had a way of just having black people killed. Just like my grandma used to talk about him. We used to sneak downstairs and listen to Richard Pryor albums and all that stuff.
Right,
but, you know,
I've heard that before.
But and Eddie brought that fly shit.
That's how I feel about Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie brought the fly shit. You know, he brought the leather suit.
Yeah.
Had all the girls and you know. But he was telling them, you know, so he's in there. But Richard was just incredibly vulnerable. He laid it out on the table. And to do a special after you burn yourself up from Freebasing and it still be great.
Right.
And then the story about that special, he bombed that first. Puts you like this. He did two shows that night. If DJ Self was at the first one, he would have left. He would have been like, yo, Richard Pryor stinks. But he came back on the second one. and it turned into a classic. So you go, oh, so he had, there's things, him and Jim Brown, when they was fighting, when Jim Brown tried to rehabilitate him because he was in there doing heroin, and Jim Brown was the one that picked him up and got him to rehab. That whole joke.
Oh, shit.
The way he described the Italians when he was working for them, when he was doing shows with mafia clubs, and how we broke that down. And then, and he just does the best pussy jokes I've ever heard in my life. Just the way he does it and the way he says motherfucker is better than anybody else's motherfucker. So Richard is always going to be my guy, but then Chappelle is cerebral. He's a suburban kid, but that just knew how to write, knew how to talk. He know about timing, he know about callbacks. And when I was 15, Killing Them Softly came out, and I never seen a dude in Tim's and just a blue shirt rock a DC crowd the way he was rocking that DC crowd. Niggas was standing up for him in the middle of the show. So I'm like, what is this art form? And then Chris Rock, when Bigger and Blacker came out, when he ran out and niggas from Harlem jumped up in the balcony, like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, what is this? What is this thing? And I always wanted to go, how do I do that? So it's always been Richard, Dave, and I guess Chris Rock too. And then,
who do you think is the most disrespectful comic right now?
Eddie Griffin. Eddie Griffin don't give a fuck.
More than Corey?
Corey says fun shit.
Corey
shit out. It's shit I understand.
I went to see him last week. He was retarded.
Oh, yeah. But Corey always been like that.
Retarded.
But Corey always... I love Corey because Corey never broke. That's been Corey the whole time. I remember I saw Corey years ago. He was at a club on 4th Street. Mm. And he says, you want to hear the jokes that got that didn't make it to Wildin' Out? He was like, yeah. And he said, your mom in front of a group of ladies that were having like a reunion, they all had airbrushed t-shirts on. It was like a thing. And it's a row full of ladies, black ladies too. He went, this is the first joke that didn't work. To a bunch of ladies in the front, black women in the front with the airbrushed t-shirts, looked like a church group. He said, your mama's so nasty, her drawers look like hot wing paper. And we was like, holy shit, dog. All the comics in the back like, ah, some of the dirtiest shit I've ever seen. And the way he appalled these ladies, but they stayed in their seats. And he kept going and had them laughing. I said, yeah. Oh, and I can't forget Patrice O'Neal. That's one of my favorites. Patrice is one of my dogs. I can't not bring up comedy. I'm bringing up the dog Patrice. Because Patrice kind of, he was the only one that gave me advice when I moved to New York. So he was the only one that actually set me down and kind of gave me what you need to do to get out here. He said, this is a true story. Cypher Sound, shout out to Cypher. Syph was DJing and doing comedy at the time. So he would get all the top dogs to come to this spot on 14th and 9th Avenue called Comics. It's shut down now. And this is the first time I saw Patrice live. He's only seen him on Comedy Central. So his Comedy Central set rocked my world. I was like, this motherfucker's funny as shit. So I saw him in real life. He had a Pele Pele jacket, big dude, 300 pounds. He's like 6'5", big guy. And I remember at the time, Hot 97 was big in the stand-up. Like they was always coming out to the shows. AJ and Free was still a thing, and you know, the dude, Terrence J, he was a thing, so people would come out, bitches everywhere, rappers everywhere. This one, Red Cafe was still, right? This one, I'm Ill was pop, like, just like around this time. And
good times.
Yeah, Red Cafe was still doing his thing, so it was like, this one, Chic Looch was coming up to comedy shows. I saw Patrice, crowd was rowdy, because Rob Stapleton went on right before him and put on a clinic. He put on a fucking clinic. Crowd is uneasy with laughs, and they just talk and carrying on. Patrice walks out and sits down and just waits for him. He just goes, rowdy ass Hot 97 crowd. He just goes. And then you see, second after second, you see a whole crowd just kind of, what's this nigga got to say? And then he drops that first line, and I was like, holy fuck. So I saw that as a new dude, as a new comic that moved from Philly. So I was in awe. And then Cypher Sounds introduced me to him. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. He was like, yo, Cypher, yeah, this nigga, young nigga, Cypher was like, this dude from Philly. Now he up Jersey City, going past on the PATH train to get to New York every night, tell jokes. And he was like, oh, you from Jersey City? I'll give you a ride home, little nigga. That's what he said. I'll give you a ride home, little nigga. So now we in the car, and right before he drops me off, I get up the gumption to go, hey, man, you supposed to be the dude out here. And you are. All respect, humbly. I was like, is there anything you could say to a young dude, you know, to kind of get me going out in New York City? So he said, that's what he said. I'll never forget. He said, well, I'm old and I'm done. I hate comedy. He was like, these little shows that you do, they for you, they ain't for me. He was like, so I guess if I had to tell you anything, I guess write prolific shit, get on stage, and get the fuck out of my car. Like, nigga, why are you still in my car? And I was like, yeah, you're right. And I got out. And he rolled the window and he was like, I'll see you around the block, little nigga. And he spun off and went up jail. It was the, I said, damn, that was cool. I was like, that was cool. And that was within 2 weeks of me moving to New York.
Okay.
That's exactly what he said. And I never forgot it. So basically the get out the car part was keep it moving, dog.
Yeah.
Just keep at it. So right prolific shit, get on stage and get out. That
is hilarious.
So yeah, man. So that was the advice that kind of that lit the fire on me the whole time I've been out here. It's what Patrice said, because it was so simple.
Yeah.
It was simple. It wasn't like, he wasn't trying to be deep. This motherfucker wasn't soapboxing. He wasn't trying to sun me. He was like, look, dog, this is what it is. You can choose to do it or you don't. And that was it. And then from then on, I've been popping like fish grease. So it's like.
Now, sometimes that advice, like we were just talking to Mano about this, and it's like, sometimes the advice you get, it's like plain and simple, like not over the top, like that plain, like do this, do that, and like get the fuck on. Like that realist type, because it's a realist. It's not like this super fluffed positivity quote. Like it's like real shit.
He
this is
that
what
guy.
You do. And keep it moving. That is more impactful sometimes.
I was like, damn, that made a lot of sense. And I was like, well, shit, right? Prolific shit, get on stage.
And get the fuck
and keep
on.
Get the fuck on, dog. I'm like, yeah. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm hurt by it. I was like, well, shit, I guess that's how it got to happen in New York.
Well, I feel like as a comic, you got to have thick skin anyway, right? Like, you can't be sensitive.
No, you shouldn't be. But if I could talk, comedians are hypersensitive, especially about their craft.
Yeah?
Like, we could snap and we could joke and, we do that. And we do that to keep the skin being tough. Because if you say the wrong thing to the wrong comic, I've seen motherfuckers melt down. If you tell somebody that ain't ready to hear that they not funny enough or you say something about somebody's mom or something, it can be, oh, they mad now, or that pull to the side. Let me talk to you real quick. Like that pull over to the side. Oh, you got under their skin. The pull over to the side shit?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that.
Is it generational, though? Or is, like, because I feel like the younger generation is a lot more sensitive than us.
The guys now, the new comics they can't take a snap.
Those are the more sensitive. And again, they hate me. Probably the younger generation.
The younger generation hates me because my generation is from the tease to you good era.
Right. Or they knock you down, they expect you to get
now,
back up.
All the Gen Z's now, everybody workshop, everybody the holding Gen hands. Z's, right. You're good. You can go up there and be funny.
A trophy for anything.
They just hold hands and tell jokes and workshop together.
And everyone's a winner.
Everybody's kumbaya. It was not kumbaya, especially in Philly when you had Kevin Hart, D. Lee, Javon Colt, like all them Philly, or them dudes you saw on like Comic View. They was hanging out in Philly. And these dudes was just snapping talent. When talent, fucking early 2000s talent, was if you bombed on a talent show, he will do 10 minutes on your jacket. And the crowd be just, what the fuck? 88 Keys. I remember I bombed my first Def Jam audition, 88 Keys, in 2011.
What?
And I went up, and I thought I had my best Adidas jacket on. And ate it in front of all them black and Spanish people. Talent got on stage and was like, what the fuck was this nigga's jacket about? Whole crowd, fuck crazy. And he just kept dogging my jacket. But I wound up opening for Talent the next year.
Okay.
I kept at it. Because I was like, all right, I deserve that ripping. But okay, I'll get better at comedy so I don't get my ass destroyed again. Pause. So yeah.
Definitely.
Pause police over
pause.
Here.
Pause. But yeah, I know. I figured. This nigga, you gotta say pause. but no. Yeah, man.
I picked Def Jam over Comic View, though.
Well, Def Jam was Def Jam.
I mean, I do.
Well, Comic View didn't have Martin.
Right, and that makes a big difference.
Comic View didn't have a Martin
that
Lawrence.
That makes a big difference. Yeah. Martin
driving the ship. Comic View didn't have a Bernie Mac with the
head on. They didn't have Capri either.
100%.
Comic View didn't have a Chris Tucker with the skull cap on, you know. Right. Comic View didn't have, who else had like a classic set on there?
Bernie Mac.
Yeah, I just said it, depending on jeans and the old DLs of this world. Yeah, man. Comic View was
question.
But Def Jam was like, whoa.
Def Jam was
my other question. I love Chris Tucker, but I do think that he's better in movies than stand-up.
He is. He only has 14 minutes.
So that's another
Tucker
thing.
Tucker has two sets. He has two famous sets, and they were both on Def Jam. And that's 14 minutes total. And that's all he needed in order to be Rush Hour.
So do you think that if you're good in movies, you're not necessarily the best in stand-ups?
You just got to hustle more. You got to be good at both.
Okay.
You can do movies, but as you're doing movies, you should probably still be getting on stage if you want to be good at both.
I think Bernie was good at both, right?
Bernie was good at both.
Yeah, he was, actually.
Bernie was fantastic at both.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Will Smith never did stand-up.
Nah, I don't think he did.
But he did an episode on Fresh Prince about doing stand-up.
Yes.
And he admitted to DL that he couldn't do it. That was pretty ill. That was pretty ill. Like, he tried to do DL's stand-up special on The Tonight Show, and he bombed because he didn't have the same time as DL. But that's a whole thing. But no, Will Smith been a funny motherfucker the whole time, but he never really...
Chris could do both.
Chris Tucker?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock can do both.
He can do both. It's I like his stand-ups better, though.
He doing like SNL on December 14th, if you want to check
he
it out.
He is?
He hosting SNL on December 14th.
Oh, I got to see that.
He's been running around the city. He's been getting up on every night.
That's crazy.
Down at the cellar, tightening it up to get ready for SNL.
I got to see that.
Party going to be great, too.
So, how you felt about Mike Epps when he was beefing with Kevin Hart?
Think it was him? I love Mike. Put to you like this. Mike, that's I read his book. Mike's one of the funniest dudes on the planet. A lot of people don't think that. He had four specials, but two of them were classics that are underrated.
Okay.
The first one, underrated, X-Faded, crazy. Mm-hmm. And then the other one where he had the blue suit on one mic, perfect. And then he had one for HBO that, you know, and then the other one, whatever. But he can beef. That's what keeps him in. Right? Yeah. That keep you relevant.
Pause.
Oh, shit, pause. I'm sorry.
Told you he's a pause police.
In could be vagina, though.
What could be vagina?
The in. He's still in. Could be vagina.
Is that
whatever.
What you pause the in?
No, I pause. He could beef. It's
beef.
Keeps him
I
in.
Knew it was the beef.
Oh,
the beef
could, oh,
and
wow.
keeps him in.
Oh, beef.
But that's not really a pause.
All right, pause.
Beef and keep. All right, forget it. Go.
But you. Oh, but you
well, I get what you're saying.
The Kevin Hart beef. It was hilarious.
No, that's a pause, too.
The Kevin Hart beef? I put an apostrophe S.
No.
But no.
That's even worse.
All right, wait. The tension between the two comedians, Mike Epps and Kevin Hart. Was hilarious.
Yes.
It was very fun to watch this dude go, no. Whatever. I mean, Kev ain't gonna lose nothing and Mike ain't gonna lose nothing. I watched Mike's last special that he did in Arizona to a crowd that didn't really fuck with him, and I heard that hurt my feelings because he's a really funny dude, man.
He's hilarious. I love him. He used to talk
about how he used to rock in New York, but he felt like they weren't fucking with him because he wasn't mainstream enough. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't have a through line. If you watch Mike Epps' jokes, it's just joke.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
But sometimes a joke show is what motherfuckers need. So you go, Day-Day was I think he's underrated a little bit. Because
he
I think,
is.
Mike always been funny. Mike been having me laughing since the second Friday.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah.
Ever since Day-Day.
Even when he was on Def Jam. When he used to do sets on Def Jam. Remember he teased Tiny Lister with the eye? And he walked on stage and they had like this fight, but it was like a fake fight, but it was really funny.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, Mike Epps, this long time ago, it's like 96, 97, something like that. Epps. Mike Epps was on stage at Def Jam and he was teasing a dude with a goofy eye and the dude,
Debo,
was in the crowd. He got on stage, crowd went fuck crazy, but yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about some of your accolades.
Okay.
Because you won a Writers Guild Award for Amy Schumer. Well, first of all, for the Amy Schumer show.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I had to, well, I was talking to Amy just on some funny shit at the comedy club one night.
Okay.
And she thought I was funny. So she hit me up on Instagram, was like, yo, I think you're funny. You want to come on the road with me? And this was when she was pregnant. So I got two shows out of that. I did Philly and Baltimore. But she never forgot me because I did well in Philly and Baltimore. And then time, I guess Paramount Plus cut her a deal to do one more Amy Schumer role. It was like a 25 sketch deal. So she was like, well, I'm going to invite some writers to come help me write this sketch. And she called me up. And I was like, wow. And I was just with the homies smoking weed. We was getting ready to go see Avengers, the Endgame. We was watching previews like, oh, this shit going to be fire, bro. And then I get a call. And it was Amy Schumer. I was like, what the fuck? So I went in another room. She was like, yeah, I was wondering, can you write on my show? And I was like, yeah, sure. I've never been in a writer's room, so this would be a new experience. And then, you know, everything was Zoom. So I was in my room, just in sweatpants, just listening to a bunch of comedy writers. And then I came up with something that I already had said on stage. That's why I say stand-up can translate into sketch, because you could just take a stand-up joke and then add characters. And I wrote this joke about how black dudes getting pulled over by the cops. The only way we can win is if we take white girls' tears and make them put it in a bottle and spray it, and it'll turn us into a white woman in order for us to get to freedom in life. And I did. It was called privilege. Like, you spray privilege in cologne. It's called privilege. And if privilege, it'll help you out. So when I wrote it, they loved it. And I got two sketches on Paramount Plus, and that was one of the reasons they got the Writers Guild thing. Because two of the sketches I wrote was, like, pretty powerful enough to push us over the line. So that's how I won. But I took a joke that I was already doing and I made it into a sketch. The sketch wound up being great. And then, you know, push, come, shove, I won a Writers Guild Award. It's pretty wild. But there was a lot of people involved in that, so I'll never say I did that myself. There was a lot of wonderful comedy writers on there, but I felt I was glad I was part of a team that we was funny enough to get that actual award. We beat SNL. We beat SNL that year. It was pretty wild.
Wow. That's a big
And that was cool. That was cool. My mom was there, and I didn't think we was going to win. So my mom just being in the room with Steven Spielberg and Spike Lee was already enough.
That's dope.
Mm. But then when we won the award, I was like, oh, shit, I get to go on stage holding the award. All these goofy motherfuckers. In the you know, my mom was like, she was like, oh, my God. You know, that
must have been
shit.
A moment. Yeah, that's a moment.
It was a good time.
That's a moment. And what about you? So you were nominated for a Daytime Emmy, too. For
I was. Helpsters. But it was this was some kid shit.
But still, it's a Daytime Emmy. I'll take it.
I was singing and dancing with puppets. Now, here come the funny part. Now, it was the Sesame Street people, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't the Sesame Street characters, but it was the Sesame Street people. They was making new characters for Apple TV. So I went on there. I had to be funny with puppets. That's really crazy because the humans are down here. The puppets is up here. Mm-hmm. So you got to keep your eyes here instead of down there. So to be able to act and be funny with shit that ain't real because people got people doing that on the bottom was pretty ill. And then, yeah, I got the nom, but I went up against Lupita Nyong'o. She beat my ass. I went to the award show, height of COVID. So everything was all green screen. Everybody was separated. Mm. And then she won on a Zoom call. That was fucked up. I was standing there in a $2,000 suit. Lupita looked like she just wiped the coal out of her eyes from sleep. Was like, thank y'all, Daytime Emmys. And you know, I was like, the realization I had in that moment, because she was sitting on a desk and she was cut. I was like, this bitch got her drawers on. And she just beat my ass in her drawers from home. And I flew out to LA and put on a little dumb monkey suit to try to see if I was going to. It was my mom's idea because I did it for her. She was like, go. And I was like, Mom, whatever. And then Lupita beat me from her home. And I was like, that was fun, but damn, I'll never do that again. So,
yeah, but that's Lupita. Like, if you're going to lose to anyone, I mean, come on.
I was like, yeah, I'll lose to her. But yeah, she was completely on a Zoom. She wasn't even there, dog. It was.
I mean, she's like. Kind of like Beyonce level in a sense, you know what I mean?
In the movies, I guess, sure.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
All right. Moving on.
She's in Staten Island.
Huh? Yes.
Oh, yeah. How about that? Shout out to my homie Pete.
I was going to say, are you close with Pete?
That was my dog.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Pete was the dude that put me in my first movie. So it was really cool. And then to be able to audition in front of Judd Apatow was very fun. It was like, oh, shit. And then be able to improv most of those scenes and then come off on a cinematic level and be able to come out was.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It was a cool experience, man. That got me that. And then he put me on Bupkis, that show that was on Peacock that whole season. I was fly. Yeah, man. I attribute Pete to a lot of. Because he helped me out. Like, I used to sleep on Pete's couch when I was like 29. He was like 19, but he had money.
Yeah.
So he was like, yo, just sleep on my couch and we'll figure this out. And we both got our Canada. Our Just for Laughs showcased the same time, so we both went to Canada, and he got SNL, and I got this show on MTV called Broke Ass Game Show. I don't know if you remember
that. Okay.
And I was like a game show host for a long time, and then I stopped doing that, and then I started really acting, and then my first joint was Will and Grace, Pause, and then I went from that, and then I went to Last OG. That's when Tracy Morgan's show, I was on that for a few seasons. Tough.
Okay, I love that.
And then Tracy, I learned a lot from Tracy. Just that hood funny. The hood funny that translates into somehow translates.
He's funny too.
He's funny.
He has a funny way about him.
He's from the Bronx?
BX, baby.
Ain't he from Brooklyn? He's not from the Bronx? Okay.
From the Bronx.
All right, but
that's
yeah.
ours.
He's funny.
Yeah.
He is. I like him better in movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, Tracy's great in movies. But at one point he did have some really good shit on stage. I used to watch him when he used to be when he was 30 Rock Tracy. He used to come by the clubs.
Hilarious.
He pull up in a Lambo, right? He pull up to the comedy club in a Lambo, get out. You know, somebody watch my car, man. And then we were like, all right. And then he'd walk downstairs, pull his stomach out, start rubbing it, and then he start telling jokes. The nigga, he's been crazy, but it's like it works for him.
Uptown Comedy Club.
Uptown. That Uptown Comedy Club when he had still had the hat with the propeller on it.
Yeah.
So. It wasn't like he didn't have it. And plus, him as Hustle Man on Martin.
Hilarious.
And then when I was able to meet Hustle Man.
I got the chickens.
But what was so funny, it was disappointing. I brought up some Hustle Man shit. He was like, don't talk about that, man. It's old me, man. I'm like, all right.
I love Hustle
it's
Man.
It's not me no more, man. I'm like, all right. Sorry. But he was great as Hustle Man.
He was.
You know my slogan. If you want it, I got it. If I ain't got it, forget it. So you better do it while it's getting good. Like that shit. That's classic shit. The free range chicken, the pigeons.
That's
on the
why I got the chickens. I still watch Martin. I watch it at least once a week.
Yeah, that's passe. We use molasses now. Molasses, that whole, yeah, what you mean, pay your rent? Like that shit had us going in school, in grade school to high school. So when I was able to meet dude, like, this shit is fucking just Hustle Man. And then he wasn't even on a Hustle Man shit anymore. He was skinny now. And then was this before or after that accident? This before the accident. And then the accident. And then he lived. He kind of turned into like a slash comic slash preacher. It was weird. Like when a motherfucker danced with death, everything's either a sermon or a joke after that. Like it's either advice or some funny shit. It's weird though. But that experience was great because I got to work with the late, how the fuck am I forgetting his name? The motherfucker that played Apollo. Oh,
Mike Jackson.
No, the old, the real one.
Action Jackson.
I got the chance to work with him. Carl Weathers. I got to work with Carl Weathers.
Oh, that's crazy.
A couple of actresses is out now. Just to be able to work with.
Actor.
Yeah, man. I got to work with the old Aunt Viv. That shit was
you did?
Crazy. I was like, yeah. Yeah, man. So, yeah.
What'd you work with her on?
One of them episodes of Last OJ.
Yeah. I didn't finish watching the series.
To be able to hang out with them was like fly. He showed me some cool old school TV shit that I was able to act in and be funny, and that got me, you know, I was paid for a little while. It was good, and then the show got canceled, and then you know you start over. But that's shows and shit like that. Now Blue Bloods, I work with the fake cops, so you know it's fake cops.
Don't worry,
I ain't no snitch. But Blue Bloods with Donnie Wahlberg, that was fun.
Okay.
I was only supposed to do one episode, but I made him laugh on the set, and then kept. I was supposed to get shot in the chest, and they shot me in the shoulder and brought me back a few more episodes.
Okay.
You like the comedy thing better or the acting thing?
I love the comedy thing better, but it's such a slow hustle. Mm. But okay. The acting be having it keep my pockets right. And I'm like, damn, I gotta keep acting because right. Those it's not the initial check, it's the residual checks, especially when it's ABC, CBS, NBC. Yeah. Them things be coming to my mom. My mom be calling me, you know you got a check for $7,000 over here. I'm like, oh thank Sick. God.
Right.
Yeah, you'd be like, yeah, because they always keep me afloat. They kept me afloat all through pandemic because I did all that shit back in 2018, 2017, 2019.
Okay.
And then shout out to my boy Michael Che. I was on his sketch show for two, that day Michael Che show. He put me on the HBO for the first time. So yeah, man, sketch and comedy and then linking up with the right comics to put you on the right platforms. It's good. It's a real cool thing.
I just want to make one point because he and I, we always go back and forth about Jay-Z and Nas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Nas, he's Jay-Z. But I just want to make a point today.
I'm Nas.
Not last time. Today's the 13th anniversary of Ether.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
Just letting you know.
You Jay-Z.
What are you talking about? You.
I'm Nas.
That's not true because you tried to say that Jay-Z was always a boss.
Yes. I said was this. If you make a song and you say you was nutting on my baby seat.
Oh yeah, I remember
and
that.
You fuck my baby mom.
Remember that?
Right?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not never signing to you.
Hmm.
That was the point I made where I say Jay won because Nas came and signed to him later on.
How about that?
You're not gonna fuck my baby mom and talk about skeeting on my baby seat and I come and sign to you.
I like that. Cause that's you remember when Freddie Gibbs called out Jeezy? Over that verse battle,
yes.
Over that verse battle when Gucci Mane said we smoking on Poopy tonight.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And he was like, "Don't talk rap to me no more." So I feel that angle.
Yeah, that's crazy.
When Freddie Gibbs called out, "Don't talk hip hop to me no more, nigga. You gonna go on stage and do say we smoking on your homie tonight?" And then y'all did a song together at the end. So I feel that.
Yeah, I can't do that. I can't. That was too dick sucking lips. It's crazy. We can't be cool.
Yeah,
but I think it goes both ends. Both ends.
But Jay really fucked his baby mom. That's a little. And then she was doing interviews like, yeah, I did it. Like
that's supposed to be his
Earth.
No,
and she also did a book which I read. So
that's supposed to be not his Earth.
And I come work. And I come.
That Earth. Damn.
And then you come sign me. Like
damn.
I'm not under you, but you know.
We were talking about bars, not.
Yeah, but it's real life in this now.
Hip hop.
So you're with them?
Goes deep. I mean,
I'm not.
I like both rappers because you know I spent my whole high school years listening to both of them, and Nas, Illmatic, all that.
Come on now.
But you gotta understand, Hard Knock Life Volume 2.
That was great.
That
was great.
Okay, let me set up a scene. Let me set it up. Okay, Nas, yes. But in Philadelphia, In 1999, we were on the SEPTA bus, and Money Cash Hoes came on.
Ooh,
the radio
that's my shit. I'm not gonna lie.
And then he, then the BDMX, and my, we was in Philly. Jigga, rock my nigga, rhyme all night. What the fuck?
Okay. So how do we feel about Jay leaving Beanie in the dust?
All right.
Since you're from Philly, we're going to talk about all it, right. And we'll fuck
we
it
leave
then.
Philly in the dust. Now.
Never came to no court dates.
Well, we know Beanie was kind of toxic back then. That's your artist that jumps out into a live crowd and don't hit anybody.
It's a little toxic.
It's the nigga who stole my chain and they'll beat up everybody in the fucking studio. This is the dude that just, he's unruly. Like, you trying to do business. You trying to give an unruly nigga millions.
Right.
You can't trust, like, he a Philly, like, Philly niggas is fucking, like, they crazy, dog. So you got to be like, damn, he's turning into a liability. I mean, he can rap, but this motherfucker's lifestyle is kind of fucking with my lifestyle. Okay, for instance, remember when Jay brought Michael Jackson on stage?
Yes.
And everybody was tripping except Jay. And Dane was doing all the dancing behind, and Jay was just standing like, yo, this nigga's really embarrassing me. Like, you gotta kind of cut toxic motherfucker. Cause you know, Jay trying to make billions. This motherfucker got a whole plan. The Memphis Bleak story let me know. This nigga was different. When he's like, when he asked Jay for money and he opened up a drawer and it was stacked with hundreds, he said, take 100 off the top, that whole thing. I was like, oh yeah, Jay on some other time. These Philly niggas, they can rap, but they not on the businessman time that Jay was. So Jay had to kind of cut him off. And if for Beanie to be mad, that's acceptable. That's fine. He was doing something. And then you weren't doing something, but your lifestyle is kind of tarnishing the look that Rockefeller is supposed to be. So
I feel that he got to a point where he was, and he left everybody. It's my feeling.
Okay.
People say that.
We swipe these stats.
Well, Bleak could be a hit away his whole career. But as long as I'm alive, he's a millionaire.
Well, no, that's he does still have his, like, label, right? Like, Casanova was his artist before he got locked up, so.
He left Dame.
He left Dame.
Dame is feeling the vapors on that.
He left Dame.
I see it all online.
He left Beanie, right?
Okay.
I watched some state property, like Chris and Neef and them. They don't talk bad about him because they still feel there's a chance they could get back in, but okay. I see it. Who did he keep?
But now, okay, that's
besides
fine.
Besides Emery.
Okay, Emery's going to ride with him, but okay.
Besides him.
It's all about work ethic, Jim. It's just about work what these motherfuckers writing. Like, what songs were at least trying to do? And then that whole thing when they was like, right before 50 came out. Hey, y'all motherfuckers need to drop right now.
Yeah.
And they was still partying. It was all about getting, they was in Philly. I was seeing those skin on Sparks. They was on South Street at fucking City Blue, buying up all the shit. I'm like, 50, and then when Jay, the boss, is like, dog, there's a nigga from Queens coming. Y'all need to drop. And y'all don't drop. And then In the Club came out.
It's over.
I'm like, damn, I was like, oh, they had a chance.
That's true.
So when niggas don't take chances, it's kind of, you see in the long run, like, what happens? You be like, well, I told you what you had to do, but y'all was partying because y'all was with Jay. And y'all had these couple songs. But how bad do you want it? And I was like, well, fuck. That's one way to look at it. But that's tough. That's life. Niggas get left.
All right. So at what point do you come back for your homies?
Well, Beanie, he fucked his liver up, so he can't even rap no more. So he's doing the food truck.
Got shot in his neck.
He got shot in his neck. Damn. That's liability talk. Damn, why'd he get shot in the neck? Because he's out there probably wilding the fuck out.
That don't mean leave me in the ghetto, though. Right?
I got you. Okay. Then you're right. I mean, there should be some Jay-Z help a rap nigga program, but he didn't put it out. So I guess he's faulty on that point. I mean, no man is perfect.
Well, can we name one artist he kept?
Okay.
Rihanna.
That's my point.
Rihanna?
I think Bleak still fuck with him like that, though.
Bleak, I just want
to
hear.
Bleak don't look like he doing good. Not to me. I mean,
well, from Drink Champs, they still look like they got lives.
They got the old Rockefeller chains. It don't look like money right now.
But but even still, would they survive in this new age for rappers? Like, these niggas old.
Well, no, but let me tell you, a lot of legacy rappers are having a resurgence.
Okay, then fine.
Like who? Besides
Jada?
Well, The Lox, LL Cool J, Wu-Tang right now, Ghostface Killah still releasing stuff.
LL saying, I'm the reason for everything. I thought that was really good.
But I don't think he gets his flowers enough. And I'm guilty for that, too. Like, when you ask me my favorite rappers, like LL, I don't mention him. But when you really think about it, he's been putting on for a long time.
Well, he's a pioneer of rap.
He is a pioneer. And I do think that he gets overlooked.
Because he's a ladies' man. I don't know about a pioneer rap.
Nah, he is. He is.
Well, he was one of the first niggas.
He absolutely is.
Pioneer rap means you learn the first niggas rapping. That's all that.
Right. So he's like, what, Crush Groove? The first Def Jam.
Box.
Yeah.
All right.
My radio, believe me, I like it. Fine.
Is LL a lyricist?
The whole cannabis thing. Did he win the cannabis thing?
He used to be. He was. Well, I think mid-1990s. He became more of a ladies' man.
The mic on my arm.
He outsmarted Canvas.
I'm going to knock you out. What was Mama said knock you out.
That's not lyrics.
It kind of is.
Hold on.
It's just not, like, super sped up. But
got a jammy in my hand. Damn. Pause.
Yeah. When I'm alone in my room, sometimes that's not really lyrics.
That's
He's skating. And he's a ladies' man.
But he did prove that he could hold his own if tested.
You know, the whole...
He only had cannabis, right?
The cannabis beef, and then 4321 when he called cannabis out on the same track. Cannabis was on.
Wait. What about I shot you? Like, come on.
You got an LL slide.
Come on.
I like LL. I like him.
No, but I'm saying I shot you. Like, we gonna forget that? Like,
I don't want to hit LL right today.
No, I mean, listen. It is what it is. I'm just saying. Like, he does get overlooked.
I mean, I wasn't looking for an LL album, but
he got one coming out.
He got it out already. And we had to go, you know, Q-Tip producing it. That's what made motherfuckers go, well, maybe I should listen to him. But I'm not talking for nobody. I didn't listen to the LL album, but I probably should because I like rap, right? But I
want to see him on set.
I know. And then he going to give me shit.
Yeah.
And LL can't take a joke from all them Jamie Foxx podcasts. LL don't like
wanna
jokes.
He want to fight all the time.
So I'm like, I don't know, bro.
I don't think he going to fight now. I think he like.
You don't want to make me mad, nigga. You want to socialize.
He's gonna fight them all.
LL ornery. Ornery ass dude. But he's rap. I'll give it to LL.
He.
Nah, we.
He can rap. I've never said he cannot.
We gotta give him his flowers.
LL's great.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
I don't want him coming to my shows.
Not a lyricist.
Corny, nigga. I don't need that.
Not a lyricist, no.
But not. He can rap. He can rap. Not a lyricist.
He can rap.
I like that. Whatever.
He can rap.
This is good coffee.
Okay, so you have a show coming up.
I do.
Tell us about it.
December 10th, I'm filming a comedy special called Goodlum in Brooklyn. Now,
Goodlum comes
from the idea of my first 15-minute Netflix special. I'm from the suburbs, so I call myself Cul-de-sac Black.
Okay.
Like, I'm not from the streets. I know about the streets if they end in a circle, and that's basically the cul-de-sac. I grew up with silver spoon in my mouth and fucking my mom and my pop and... I didn't really have it hard coming up. I had a rich grandmom. Like, it's just, you know, my dad was always, my mom always had money. I never wanted for anything. It was really no struggle. But I still love hip hop. I still love hanging around all Black people. I still like going to all the fly Black shit. And I'm never going to be a hood dude. Mm-hmm. But I'm a good dude. So Hoodlum is like, just like, all right, drop the H, put a G. And it starts saying a lot of nice things, very mean.
Okay.
So I'm never going to say something that'll hurt your feelings. It'll sound like I'm hurting your feelings, but damn, he's really saying some real positive shit.
No, you are like that. So you are like that. Nigga, yes, you are.
He not a hood dude. He a good dude. But, you know, he talk a little niggerish to where we're comfortable with it. And it's like he don't front like he from somewhere he not.
Right.
So the whole Cul-de-sac Black idea is now transformed from 15 minutes to an hour of ideas that kind of go with that same theme. So... Goodlum is me. Goodlum is just the hip-hop influenced suburb kid that just really was like, well, I like jokes and music. And I'm going to go out there and be amongst the wolves and hope I don't get bit. And it was like, yeah. And that's how I'm going to do it. So Goodlum is just a 60-minute joke show of all those kind of jokes. So if you fuck with that, and it's peaceful, but it's not. It's a lot of cussing. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of good takes about New York City.
And
it's
filming here?
It's filming at Second City in Brooklyn.
Oh, it sounds like we could go.
We are going.
The,
next
December
Tuesday,
December 10th,
right?
The 7 o'clock and the 9 o'clock show. It's two shows.
Nine.
You go to the 9 one, the late one is always more fun. And it's going to be a wallop, man. I'm doing it because I'm shouting out all my dogs that I came up with when I first got out here. And then just moving through just stand-up as a whole in New York. and just, I have, you know, been doing, running around here for 15 years. I just compiled all the best ideas I have into a 60-minute wallop of fun called Goodlum. So it's I'm recording it next week, December 10th, 7 o'clock, and 9 o'clock show. It's going to be a really funny time. And I do a joke about DMX, and I'm glad I'm seeing this.
Yeah.
I have a joke that I dedicate to DMX because he's dead. So, yeah, it's, you can understand where I'm
because he's
from.
Dead. Got it.
Because to be 13 from the Burbs and see Get At Me Dog for the first time on MTV Raps, and I'm sitting on my mother's whatever couch, like this shit. And to be from the Burbs, but to watch this dude go, let's take it back to the streets, mother. You go, what the fuck is this? And then Get At Me Dog kind of changed the whole thing. I was like, I want to listen to this all the time. So, yeah.
Was that your introduction to hip-hop?
No, it wasn't, but it was my introduction to me. Because my mom let me listen to Will Smith watch Sinbad, but I was like, no.
No, like, what is that? Yeah.
What is that? What's the tunnel? What is this place called? The tunnel. What is this? What are these things? I got Tim's, but my Tim's don't look like that. He barking on the track. Everybody was barking in school. What? All the little church girls was calling him Earl. They weren't even calling him DMX. Maybe he was getting all these little girlies, little hot in the pants. I'm like,
Earl Simmons.
Nigga, he's not church at all, but he is because he prayed. And then in Belly, when he fucked shit out of the girl, we was like,
Belly?
I want to be like that dude.
I don't know no fucking Keanu.
Tommy Buns. Yeah. And then we was all mad when he didn't shoot the preacher at the end. We was in the mirror movies. They're like, what the f?
Yep.
You supposed to kill dude. Yeah, man. That was great. He was the only one that could actually act in a movie, but I won't say too much. I know y'all love Nas, but Nas can't act out of a box, dog.
Nas was terrible.
Oh, man. Nas couldn't act worth a fucking damn, but shout out to Method Man and DMX for holding that movie down.
Yeah, they did. And Big Boy, too, because Big Boy was the dude eating the banana paws.
No, that's not Big Boy.
That wasn't...
You know who that is?
Menace.
That's the book.
Oh, shit, wait, yes.
I don't like that shit. I don't like that shit at all.
Then what's his name?
Meth did his thing.
Yeah, Meth did his thing.
He did.
Got killed.
But I bought a gift. I bought a gift in the whole nine.
Yeah.
I gotta watch that again. It's been a minute.
It's great.
I love that movie.
It's a great movie. The Top intro five. Is still one of the greatest Hype Williams intros.
100%.
Of all time.
100%.
Yes. One of the greatest
Hype Williams intros. With the glow in the dark eyes.
What are you doing?
Anything you regret? Any mistakes? You feel like you missed on any opportunities?
Oh, yeah. I didn't kill on my Guy Code audition a long time ago. Got Cold on MTV2.
I know Got Cold.
That catapulted so many of my friends, and I bombed on my joint. Great, thank God I got it back on MTV1, but MTV2 was popping.
Mm.
And I was like, I had a job, I had a check, but MTV2 was getting all the looks, and
right.
I didn't get on that. And then I didn't get Wildin' Out. My shit wasn't funny enough for Wildin' Out, and I was like,
really?
Fuck, I gotta get on. I gotta, yeah, because first of all, I got called in late, so I was asleep when they called me, go to MTV right now. And then when I got in there, everybody had props in their pocket. This one comic, he had like confetti. I was like, you was on the train with confetti in your pocket? So when they did the rap battle, he did the thing and threw it at the judges, and everybody went, I was like, hey, I was underprepared. I didn't know I was supposed to have props.
You're
in
not a gimmick. You're not a gimmick guy.
And it's another regret. I don't have too many. I mean, I did what I was supposed to do. I remember in Philly, I did all the shows. The hood ones, the good ones. I was at the ones at the Jamaican restaurant. And then I was at the ones at the club. I ran to the ones in North Philly that had the upstairs and the row home. And it was just a bunch of niggas from North just throwing shit at me. I did all that. So it was like, all right. So regrets, the only thing I regret is just not doing more shows. The shows I missed, I wish I did. So, you know, it's just like, I can't regret something that I can't do. Like I never had DC Young Fly's talent.
Mm.
I had my own, but I was like, damn, he got something.
DC Fly.
But you can't compare yourself to anybody else.
No,
it's,
you can't.
Bitch shit. So you just gotta kinda look at yourself and just work on what you can work on. So just regrets was just bombing on those two MTV auditions. Like, yo, I should've got Wild Out. I should've got Code, because that would've put me in another light. The young kids would've seen me more. I've been able to sell out more arenas or more clubs a long time ago. But not really. And just, I wish I was more tech savvy so I could get these Instagram numbers up right. So, but other than that, yeah, what up?
You could hire someone for that.
Yeah, but yeah, so regrets, not too many, thank God. I didn't fuck up too much in the game, because my mama kept me right. I was from church, so I always had a little sinner to me. And, you know, I never liked yes men. I never liked motherfuckers that lied to me and told me I was funny when I wasn't.
Because
I was like, I know what I did up there, so don't If it was whack, it was whack. And that's why I found all my right friends. Because these the niggas be like, yo, that shit was ass. You need to work on that, do something, go back to your day job, because that shit was trash. So you sit there like, fuck, do I get sad or do I get better? You know, so I believe Freddie Gibbs said it, even though he was directing this to a woman, you gonna cry in this Toyota or this Maybach? So, you know, so figure it out. So not too many, but great question. That shit, that made me think, like, what do I regret? But no, I regret not doing it at 18. Instead of 19, so yeah.
Better late than never.
Yeah. But no, I'm glad hip hop was there the whole time.
Just definitely
listening to rap.
He definitely gonna make me listen to Westside. Yeah, more. I like Westside.
I'm gonna check it out.
Still Praying is great. Still Praying is classic. It's a classic album. But my favorite album from him is Fly God is an Awesome God too. Michael Irvin. Shit's crazy.
I got a lot of West Side in my phone. I just don't listen to him.
Yeah. I listen to him. Because West, it's a strange motivation he give you. He'd be like, I want to be fly. Like, I'm the fly god. Like, what? Who calls himself that? What? Because I thought it was fabulous for the longest time.
I mean,
I thought it was fab. I thought it was ASAP. But nah, this dude be an Art Basel throwing wrestling shows.
You think, like, he's flyer than Fab and ASAP?
You know, ASAP just won that award, yeah. And Fab had the jerseys and all the fly shit, but it's something about his voice. It's this dude from Buffalo that you shouldn't be liking. But he talk weird. He say his R is really funny. He says GXFR, but you be like, okay, that's that buff, whatever.
That's that Buffalo Boston
but
thing.
But man, when he got Most Def and Ty Lib on the track, he brought Black Star back to do Peppers. I was like, and then he was in the hood with furry boots on, Go Yard Messenger hanging off the shoulder. I'm like, what? The bubble coat Gucci just at the Jamaican restaurant eating jerk chicken. I said, this shit is fucking fire. I was like, I don't even understand it. So I'm from the burbs of Jersey, but this is crazy. This is crazy. Like, this dude is different.
I have to listen to him based off this conversation.
And then, okay.
I've been listening to
Benny. And then there's
a
song he got called The Narcissist. But the hook is so great. You go, I guess. He goes, Dolce Rockabana for a half a man. That's a lot of money. Rock Nation Brunch Stout and Dapper Dan. Niggas gonna miss me when I'm done with this shit. The kitchen keep begging me to bag up grams. I said, that is the coldest shit I've ever heard in my life on a hook. What? I said, nah, that's crazy. I got a $500,000 outfit on. I'm at Rock Nation Brunch wearing Dapper Dan. People
begging me
to bag these grams to give it out to them. And they gonna miss me when I'm done with it. What the? Who the fuck talks that kind of shit on a track?
Yeah.
And premiere on the beat. I'm like, yeah.
You gotta narrate one of the West Side.
Now you need to do an intro or something.
He said, this song gets me through it. I listen to it before I go on stage sometime.
Yeah?
And he go, and then he got Benny the Butcher doing the last part. Took the game over like I'm supposed to. Like this, yeah. It was like, took rap over. Yeah, it's like, wow. That's a lot of
confidence. And they independent.
Any independent. That's drop okay. 20, drop fucking 10 albums during pandemic. Like, what? What? I'm like, and then be like bringing up wrestling that I used to watch when I was in grade school, like Undertaker references and Chris Benoit references, that you'd be like, I remember that, watching that on WrestleMania when I was a kid. Like, it's nostalgia meets fashion meets that hood gangster rap with art, gospel music. What? How the fuck? It's so crazy. It's like a sensory overload. So you go, I guess he has an idea that I've never seen anybody else do. And then for Wu-Tang, Raekwon on the album kind of passed him the torch. I was like, yeah, if Raekwon passed him the torch, then I'm listening to him. So, Wu-Tang.
We got to get you on an intro. West Side Gun.
West is the best. And I miss Wes at the Wine Up podcast. He was at SOB's last week. And I missed it because I wasn't there. I was so mad. He cool with Smoke Dizzy and all them niggas.
Right.
He cool with Dizzy and all them guys. So, you know, and Dizzy be coming to the club now because he cool with Sam J, another funny comic. She be bringing him around, and I'll be talking to Smoke about, it's a lie. And then, Static Selector be hanging out now at all the Dave Chappelle parties. So you be seeing all these, I'm like, so y'all know. Y'all get it. Right. You know. And everybody, I mean, when they bring up Wes, yo, Wes is, they just go, yeah, that's Wes, man. You know how they, hey, Wes be Wes. And I'm like, yeah.
We're going to get you with Wes. We're going
to
get Wes you.
Wes is my dog. If I can just talk to him real quick.
We're
going to
get you with him. We're going to get you with him.
Because Wes is carrying me now, but I tell you one thing, because it's a hip-hop podcast, Jay Electronica kept me from quitting. Exhibit C kept me from quitting comedy. Like, I quit comedy for like a 2 hours once. I was like, I can't do it. It was like 2010 or some shit like that. And I listened to Exhibit C like for an hour. And you know, they call me J Electronica, fuck that. They call me J Electronica, J Electronica, J Elect Kramadam, Muhammad Asalamica, all that shit. I was like, this nigga's what the fuck? What is this? And he was like, and then the whole part about when I was sleeping on the train, sleeping on Mesro Ave without a single slice of pizza to my name, you know, eating whack rappers, shitting out the chains, all that shit. Like, that's...
Eating whack rappers, shitting out the chains.
Yeah, I was crazy. Damn. I was like, this is some ill-ass shit these niggas be talking about. You really be going through that? I'm out in New York by myself. I done drove past Mesro Ave. Like, you was out here starving, and I'm out here trying to be somebody? Well, shit, I follow your method or whatever. Synonymous. But Jay, like, I've tweeted Jay Electronica. He never got back to me. But yeah, Exhibit C was what kept me, like, going. I was like, all right. So through hip-hop, comedy lives and vice versa. Because, you know, the rappers like comedy. Comedy like the rappers. So
it's definitely hand-in-hand.
It's motivation.
Definitely hand-in-hand.
These motherfuckers be putting out motivational speeches through rap.
What made you almost want to quit?
What made me almost want to quit? What was that? I was, I'm an analytical dude, so I'm always in my head. So doubt is a big hurdle. So, you know, if doubt wins you, you can't get out.
Yeah.
And you throw on your phone and you don't think, you don't know what's next. You're still a janitor. Right. You want to be something else. And you're trying to push that ceiling, but the ceiling ain't giving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you get down on yourself. If a motherfucker is by himself too long in his own head, moving furniture, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're crazy. Yeah, yeah. So listening to that song, "Bless My Heart That I Love Her," that what was it? Who did that? That's
Kanye? No.
No, who did that? That's
Say it again?
That's who's the guy? Just Blaze. Just Blaze did that beat. Just Blaze did the beat. And yeah, man, that crossed my heart that I love. And then it came in and it was no hook.
Who's the rapper on that?
Jay Electronica.
Exhibit C.
Exhibit C. It was, all right, puts you like this. Shit, the first time I heard it, Clark Kent spun it at what's that fucking place? Tony Touch Tuesdays over there. It was,
You'd be outside.
Yeah, Tony Touch Tuesdays.
Old Tuesday. School, too.
Tony Touch Tuesdays. This spot in Lower East Side on First and First. There's a club, and Clark Kent was spinning in there. It was 09, and he spun Exhibit C for the first time, and the whole little, we was like, what the fuck? Yeah, it was like, yeah. So, yeah.
It's 14 years ago.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Yeah, I've been in New York a long time. So, and I'm always trying to always see what's what. So Tony Touch Tuesdays, all that shit.
Yeah, you
Katra was the spot.
Wasn't that on 34th Street?
Katra, was it? It was this one, and then it was another. But it was, I remember it was the Lower East Side.
Had like red and black and red, like lettering. Yeah, that's on the West Side in the 30s.
But there was another one. It was two. It was like one in the Lower East Side, and they was doing little shows, man. And it was Tony Touch Tuesday, and it was another spot, and then it was this one joint, Sal's Playhouse or Sal's Fun Room, and that's when Just Blaze used to spend all the time on Monday, and he spun the exhibit. And that was when I first moved out, so just to watch the crowd go up. And then, you know, just listening to Funkmaster Flex, but you in New York, it feels different. So
definitely.
Man, okay, this is where I see why he's dropping bombs on this shit. You know, so moving from Philly, South Jersey to New York, I was like, this is what the fuck. Yeah, so this is what it is. Yeah, so.
And you're staying put in New York, right?
Yeah, I'm staying put in New York. Yeah, I don't think a lot of my friends moved to Jersey and all that shit. Now I'm just making enough money to stay in the city. The city's great. So okay. I'm like,
If you could do something different,
okay,
what would it be?
If I could do something different, what would it be? I would have finished school. Mm. I would have finished jazz college and did comedy at the same time.
Mm.
It didn't have to be one or the other. I could have did both and still would have had a good piano brain and a good comedy brain. It probably helped me put both brains together and come up with some better shit.
True.
But yeah, if I would have kept going through school, I would have been ill. And if I didn't quit karate when I was a kid, because I got up to like a green belt.
You can still go back to that.
Yeah, I box now. I'm boxing a little bit just to karate. You know.
I'm about to start some shit. I want to do jujitsu. I seen
there you go. Everybody, yeah. Everybody hand to hand.
I don't know if you need to be doing jujitsu.
I just seen one in Hackensack. They do it $50 a lesson. Crazy.
We don't need him out here beating people's asses. Well, got, but, probably more but than what he already does.
I want to kick a nigga bad.
But if you have it, right, it's good to have. Yeah, if you know you got it, oh, man, the shoulders roll back, and you walk around like, yeah, fuck with me. See what happens. But no, I get it. So, no, I box a little bit. But, yeah, quit in karate school. But what I would have did different, I wouldn't have quit school.
So you like New York?
Love New York.
How you feel about L.A.?
I hate L.A.
I used to do
something called pilot season out there. You go out there and audition for a whole bunch of TV shows. One might hit, you get it, and then you see if you get a season and all this. And it was a lot of waiting games, but I spent so much money. And it's draining out in the desert. Yeah. And you ain't near your friends, and everything's far away, so you can't do a bunch of shows. Because in New York, you do a bunch of shows because they all close. Right, the train can get you there, you can walk there. But in L.A., everything far. You got to drive, and it's like true. This and that, and then it's all
I love
like,
L.A. too.
I love L.A., man.
L.A., and, you know, the prerequisite is the women. The women, the weed, but that's fine, but that's the distraction.
There ain't no money.
Because you could be doing all that, getting every chick you want, smoking all the weed you want, but you ain't making no money out there. Mm. You just getting broker and broker, sitting out there chasing your dreams, trying to get on some goofy-ass TV show that they might cancel anyway.
Right.
So the risk you take out there is crazy.
New York is better for comedy.
Can risk because you can just get on so much and you can get better faster because you got more places to perform. So you could prove yourself a whole lot quicker out in New York than you could in L.A. So it's like, damn.
It's a little more superficial out there. I feel like here...
It's a lot more superficial.
Yeah, I feel like here, if you have the talent, you don't necessarily have to fit the superficial criteria.
Yeah, niggas be networking. You know how people network. Mm-hmm. That's all they do is out
there.
That's
all they do. It's just network. Right, right, right.
They don't even talk like human beings. They content robots out there. So you'd be like, oh, okay. And it's a way to go. But then when you talk to them as a human being, they just caricatures of themselves. You'd be like, are you putting on right now?
No, it's true. I mean, they do that here too, but it's not as extreme as LA.
It's not that extreme. Out there, it's like everybody Tyrese on the back of the bus singing for that Coke bottle. You'd be like, God damn, dog. Why are you singing at the top of your lungs right now? You ain't getting a deal today.
No, it's true.
You're not getting a deal today. And, what are you doing?
And there are some super... I remember walking... I was in Santa Monica, and this guy, he had a guitar. He was super fucking talented, but it's like it was him, someone else. Like
everybody out playing guitar in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Just different spots on the beach.
I guess when you make it already.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you already... Almost there.
Or you have a job that you...
Or you got a following, or you got a backup, and now it's all social media numbers. So in LA, your money is numbers out there. If you got the numbers, you good, dog. You can do anything you want out there. But man, LA just don't have that vibe, and it's never cold. No. It's cold over here.
You like
and
the cold?
That cold proves how bad you want shit.
You think so?
Niggas used to put on snow boots to get to the club.
That's true.
So you'd be like, okay.
I'd be hibernating, but that is true.
You can make a choice to stay in the house, but you know the comedy club is open.
Yeah, that's true.
And shit, sometimes it'd be just the comedy club and the movies that'd be open. Like, I remember when when everything started opening back up after pandemic, the only thing that was really open was the comedy club and the movies. That was it.
I need to get back to the comedy clubs. I used to do that. Which one? I used to go to Eastville. Is it Eastville Comedy Club?
It's New York Comedy Club now. They bought it.
Really? So,
yeah, New York Comedy Club has four clubs now, and three of them are in New York. Upper West Side, Gramercy, and down Lower East Side.
I need to get back to it.
Yeah, man.
We're going to go to your show next Tuesday, though.
You should. It's going to be good. I'm not talking all this shit now.
No, we are.
To be corny.
No, we're
going to
go.
Nah, I'm not going. I'm not trying to camp y'all.
I feel like it's hard to break through as a comic.
I mean, I'm sure it is. It is.
Because you're corny for a while. And then you just got to figure out how to not be. So my advice to anybody coming out here, if you move to New York, do the black rooms first. And don't leave them behind. Always go back time to time. But go see Smokey. Go see Capone. Go see Talent. Go see
Capone.
Rob.
Capone. I like Capone.
I love
go
Capone.
See them guys. Go sit in those rooms where it's full of drug dealers and bad bitches. And fucking... You got to end in, because I was out here when Wendy Williams used to have that Wednesday at the Laugh Factory, which was the Times Square Arts Center, right? And she used to have that thing rocking, and Capone was the host, and he would host for 45 minutes up top and absolutely shut down a crowd in New York.
Bronx, I think.
And then you got to get up and try to follow what he did is very tough.
Yeah,
so a lot of failure before you do well. But then if you get into that groove and you start seeing what the fuck it is, The Harlem Creative Performing Arts Center, the bars out in the Bronx. Shout out to Brooklyn Mike. Brooklyn Mike used to have this hot little sports bar room long time ago, and I used to watch that. Them hard rooms in Jersey that
Jersey tough.
Jersey City, Christ God. There was a spot called Jordan's. It was a hallway. And they used to bring in platters. They used to bring in platters from home. And these bitches would eat macaroni and cheese and chicken.
Going, no, what the fuck you're lying.
What you going to do up there? It was like, it's this pretentiousness from the
Jersey
black
City
crowd.
Is tough.
Prove to me, nigga, that you good. Because I'm not going to laugh if you not. So I'm like, all right. And it's like, okay. What you going to do? You going to sit here and be afraid? Or you going to go ahead? And it's just like, it's the choices you make. Hanging out. Making mistakes like talking too much in front of a room full of real comics, and then you get your ass dragged out the fucking comedy club. Getting hazed by the pros, just going on stage and being better than the dude before you, and then they look at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you? All that. It's just like, go to Essence. Go to Atlantic Avenue. Be under the train trying to tell jokes at this spot where everybody be drinking and the TVs be on. I remember one time I had to do something at Sylvia's once. We had to do a show at Sylvia's.
Huh?
Yeah. We had to do something at Sylvia's once. They didn't have a stage, so niggas stood on a chair while people was eating collard greens trying to tell jokes. It's like, it's how bad do you want it? Because it's offered to you in New York. Sometimes the conditions are great, but sometimes the conditions is fucked. But can you be good? Because the host has proven to you that it's real to be funny. That's why I love Rob Stapleton and all them guys, because they would host and murder in these rooms you didn't think was able to murder. Like, what the fuck is wrong with me? I guess I got to turn up. I got to get my shit together because these guys are killing out here.
Right.
So it was like, all right. So New York really proves to you that, yeah, you can do it.
You feel like you're missing anything?
From?
Like your comedy. You feel like you could be stronger in any
I can always be stronger. Comedy is always, you know what, comedy, this is deep, but comedy's like a highway. You ever notice the highway's never done? They always got some construction somewhere.
Yeah.
Further you drive, they always mm-hmm. try to re-clean and re-put. Yeah, you can always... Yeah, put in better asphalt. You can always put up another guardrail. You can always make it a little better. You can always rewrite and write and rewrite. Because every day, if you keep doing it, you get funnier. So when you look at the shit from yesterday, you'd be like, that shit is, I can put something in that's way better than that. And it'll get the crowd going a whole lot harder than it did last week. Listen to yourself. Watch those tapes. Right. See where you could be like, I can see why niggas didn't laugh at that. I can see why they didn't like that. I can see why. And you change it, and you got to whip up ideas to make it funnier. And the more you make yourself laugh at home, 8 times out of 10, it should work out there. So it's an ebb and flow. It's a continual art form, stand-up.
Right.
Everything else is what everybody has a process. My process is to write and rewrite, perform, write and rewrite. If it's good, write something else. Start working on that, because it's not going to start off good, and it might get good if you keep writing and rewriting. Revisions, better. You can be better. You can always say it better. You know, just like, you know, like rap albums. Like when you listen to motherfuckers, oh, they picked it up. Well, shit, maybe I should too. Yeah, so just and to write interstitially, that always gets people going.
I don't know what that word.
Let me explain. To write interstitially means you get on stage, but it sounds like you're having a conversation, but it was all written down. But you sitting there like, is this motherfucker talking to me? Am I his cousin? Why does it feel like the barbecue? It feel like he's talking right to me.
That's like the pastor. Yeah. The pastor. When you go to church?
Yeah.
No.
It's like he talks right to you.
Yeah.
Fuck my whole room.
There are some instances where you're in a crowded room and someone is talking real shit or inspirational.
What's the word again?
Eye contact.
Interstitially.
Interstitially. Gotcha.
So to write interstitially is to be like, to write it down, but to sound like it's just coming off the cuff. And that's why. That's the toughest. And that's an art form in itself. That's what I'm still trying to study. Because there's all kinds of things. You know. And then because you can get intricate in stand-up, that's what keeps me going, because you can write tags, or you can write callbacks, or you can write these big-ass wild jokes in the beginning, do a whole nother set, and then bring that shit back at the end, and people go, get the fuck! Oh, I remember what Money said to me! Yeah, so, it's just the rhythm of language. That's what it is. Stand-up is the rhythm of language. It's no music. But my God, if I can write something that gets people engaged enough to go, what the fuck else are you gonna say? All right. And then get to a punchline, it's like, well, damn, he had to rhythmically write that in order for me to stay on board to understand the punchline anyway. So it's like, so that's what I might have learned from jazz school.
Ooh.
Talk jazzy to these motherfuckers.
Talk
try to get
jazzy.
Try to figure out how to get to the point, but funny. Like, not just don't say it, but have them go, oh, I like it. Jokes. But shit. And that's basically it. Just do it and try to stay funny. Don't get angry.
Don't get angry.
Because people gonna They're going to test you all the time. You saw Self.
Yeah.
Nigga,
yeah.
If you bomb, I'm talking about you. My voice is heavy in these streets. You, if you ask, I'm pulling you out. Like, I've heard that before. So you'd be like, all right, okay. Very fair. That's fair. From somebody watching something comedy, mm-hmm. and if it don't translate funny to them, they have all right in the pain to be like, this nigga's ass. I get that. So you got to consider that. But if you're confident in your shit,
yeah.
Everybody think they fly now, but ain't nobody fly. You ever cook a half a brick in the air fryer? I'm like, yeah, how about that? I can fry up this shit. These jokes is the crack.
I usually use it for salmon, but that's neither here
nor
there.
You see what I'm saying?
You know?
It's just metaphors and all that shit.
Metaphors.
You know?
We're going to figure out the other way.
We go. Okay. Well, thank you for pulling up.
Thanks for having me. I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, this is a great conversation. This is a great conversation.
Yeah, man, I've always loved a good interview. I've always been, like, I'd be glad when I start doing interviews and talk some real shit. And I'm glad it was based around hip hop. Really mean feeling home. Y'all are fantastic. I hope this shit goes as far as it possible.
Thank you. Actually, we'll have you back.
Yeah,
We like to have some of our guests come back. And
when I'm doing the rollout for the special to come out.
We're going to that show. We got to go.
I am going. I'm already going.
Yeah, it's
going
to
be
great. I want you to say us.
We are going.
December 10th. Second City, Brooklyn, Williamsburg, 7 and a 9, Goodlum, Derek Gaines. It's my first full-length special. I'm filming it. It's going to be lights, camera, action. I'm going to make sure that it's good. I'm in here. I've been studying my set. I've been getting it hot for the last, 20 years. But for the last 3 months, it's been really, I've been going out, running the hour. I've been hitting the streets, doing it. I'm going to Jersey tomorrow to run the hour again for practice, just to make sure everything is as tight as I need it to be in order for people to laugh the way I'm talking. So, yeah. It's going to be great. The Goodlum. It's going to be great. And I appreciate y'all for letting me on here to talk my little shit.
Y'all, yeah, come back when you roll out the special.
Yeah. When the rollout come out, yeah. I'll be back. We'll talk about shit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate y'all.